Welcome back to Ed Says. We're going to talk about the Affordable Care Act, or as it was given the tag in an attempt to smear it, Obamacare, which would place people in the Republican side of things, the conservative side of things, squarely against it, which worked until people realized that Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act are the same thing. I'm sure plenty of people have seen the memes spread around and the pictures shared of people's confusion when they talked about Obamacare being rolled back, and they're saying, well, this is going to affect you, and they go, no, I'm on the Affordable Care Act. They are the same thing, just in case you weren't aware. And it looks like, according to a new poll, that there is more support for the Affordable Care Act than there was back in January, jumping up 4% when they say that who's approved of the bill. The question is, what will they replace it with? Now, during his campaign, Donald Trump said that he would replace the law with something far better. And the question is, what will that be? Because we haven't seen too much. You have Paul Ryan's plan, and it's been considered vague, has an unclear timeline for implementation, and would be a serious financial hit to the states and how they pay for their fair share of Medicaid coverage for poor Americans. Those of you who have railed against the rising costs of health care and blame the Affordable Care Act need to pull back a little, widen your focus, and realize that health care has been going up regardless. And that is what needs to be reined in. What this did was give people who didn't have health care the opportunity to have it. I forget what Paul Ryan said about it. He said something to the effect of freedom is being able to choose the health care you need, this, that, and the other. Somebody corrected him saying wealth. That is wealth. He's describing wealth. Freedom is having the access to it. And I am someone who thinks that affordable health care should be a universal right. If I had my way about it, I would strip it from the, I guess, private sector and make it a non-profit. People would still get paid for it. There would still be costs. You would still have to pay. And we would pool everyone in the nation, because we know insurance, when it's spread across every person, it's going to lighten the load. That would be the way I had it. If you get sick, the fact that you are poor or unable to pay or were born with a condition, like, there's nothing you could do if you were born with a hole in your heart. It can be fixed, but it is pricey. Or think about a kid who gets leukemia. Like, these are things that should be covered. But we're all running around waving our respective party flags, and no one has come up with a good idea to how to replace this. Most people, I would think, if they took the time to look into it, would say it needs to be tweaked. There could be some changes. But look at the history of the Affordable Care Act. A single payer was never going to happen. Republicans would never let it happen. The Affordable Care Act is Romney Care. Don't call it Obamacare. It's based on Romney Care. And the concessions in it were all made to appease Republicans who wanted them in order for it to fail. There was no working together on this. It was imperfect when it was put forward. That's without question. And it had to be by design, or it wouldn't exist at all. But rather than tearing it down and replacing it with health savings accounts, which is just BS, fix what's there. Tweak it where it needs to be tweaked. And tweak it in favor of the people, not in favor of the insurance companies. Meanwhile, we talked about Donald Trump commenting on those who are turning out at these town halls. Republicans facing some pushback against by their constituents. In Arkansas, Republican Senator Tom Cotton had one yesterday, and one woman asked Cotton, after she told him that her husband is dying and has Alzheimer's and other conditions, she said, and you want to stand there with him at home, expect us to be calm, cool, and collected? Well, what kind of insurance do you have? And maybe those who represent us should be living like us. She told him that they currently only pay $29 a month for his insurance and $39 a month for hers. They can't afford higher premiums. She said, if you can get us better coverage than this, go for it. Can you beat that? And then at one point, another attendee asked those in attendance to rise if they were affected by the Affordable Care Act. Nearly everyone did. In Arkansas, a number of people have gained health insurance over it. The problem is that those who are showing up at these town halls are being painted as paid protesters and other things. And it's ridiculous that someone who is a constituent, one woman had to say that she was not a paid protester just to make clear that she actually has interest in what is happening. That woman who says, "I'm not a paid protester," went on to list her family history. Four members serving the Revolutionary War. Her 95-year-old grandfather had seven Bronze Stars, and a great ancestor actually signed the Declaration of Independence. And her question was, "What are you doing to protect our liberties that our ancestors have fought for?" But those people at these town halls will be dismissed by the administration as paid protesters. Sad. And what that does, when it works, is it dismisses them. It allows the complaints of those who are constituents to be ignored. And it is absurd. That is not why they are elected. You win an election, you don't just serve those who voted for you. You serve everyone, even those who didn't vote for you. Then there was the kid who said to the senator, his name's Toby, says, "Donald Trump makes Mexicans not important to people who are in Arkansas who like Mexicans, like me, my grandma. And he's deleting all the parks and PBS Kids just to make a wall, and he shouldn't do that." From the mouth of babes, a child saying, "Please don't take away PBS." Said, "He shouldn't do all that stuff just for the wall." Congressman asked him how old he was. The kid said, "I'm almost 8, but I'm 7. The father, PBS Kids, is a well-worn app on multiple devices in my home, as it is around the nation. 81% of all children between the ages of 2 and 8 watch PBS. The idea that you would take that away, 81% of children. And if you're not telling me that Daniel Tiger and Sesame Street and everything else on PBS isn't worthwhile for children, if that isn't something worth saving when it's less than a percent of the budget, I think it was 0.06 and change, it's absurd. And that's how we're going to balance the budget, by cutting programs that benefit children. 81% of kids between the ages of 2 and 8 in the United States. Somebody broke it down and said the American Republic receives daily return on this for the cost of $1.35 per person per year. They are going to they want to allocate $20 billion into this wall being pushed by fiscal conservatives. But for the cost of per person less than $1.35 a year, you want to take away something that benefits 81% of kids in the United States. This lack of foresight, this lack of rational thinking, this inability, it's fear-mongering. And some of you are just rolling along with it. The annual operating costs in 2014 for PBS were $445 million. The federal spending that year was $3.23 trillion. So, oh, Jesus, less than what I said. So the Corporation for Public Broadcasting accounted for 0.000137. For those of you not good at math, 0.001%. Basically, a fraction of a fraction of a fraction. That will not balance our $3 trillion plus budget. Might make some of you feel good because, oh, that the liberal PBS and endowments for the arts and NPR, good, get rid of them. When, there's nothing liberal about teaching kids how to count and their alphabet, and that sharing is good, and that being nice to people is a good quality to have. Vilification of these organizations is absurd. And it's not even, that's just the kids' programming, not the rest of it. What about your Downton Abbey, or in Christian's case, Antiques Roadshow? I'm sure there are some of you out there who enjoy Antiques Roadshow. It's just the absurdity of the argument that this is a good idea, that this is the way to go about things. It just drives me crazy. And I go back to the labeling of those who are showing up at these town halls to voice their opinions on things as paid protesters or organized. Yeah, they're organized. That's what you do when you have like-minded people. You get organized and get together. And the underselling of this resistance as no direction or whining by Tea Partiers who did the same thing. And then the idea that, oh, it's all funded by George Soros and Barack Obama. Do the Koch brothers not remind you of the Tea Party, of how that came about? Like, it's the hypocrisy of it all. And I don't see anybody here dressing up in colonial garb and wearing tea bags from their silly hats. But this idea that everyone's a paid protester is silly. And you can't neglect your constituents. These elected officials are going to learn that quickly. Now, on the other side, or on the same side, in Arizona, Republican state senators voted on Wednesday to give police new power to arrest anyone involved in a peaceful demonstration that may turn bad even before anything actually happened. It's unbelievable. It's an expansion of the racketeering laws in the state that were aimed at organized crime, but basically they can seize the assets of those who plan and participate in protests that turn violent. Now, there are not always people who are with the protest who start these things. We learn that in everyone. Some people just want to see the world burn. Some people just want to cause trouble. But to punish those who didn't do anything, if I am the organizer of the protest and I am standing there with my sign peacefully doing nothing, to seize my assets for the actions of someone who maybe just saw an opportunity to break a window is absurd and an affront to what protesting is. And then again, what about the instances in which it was agitated and caused by the police? It's just an absurd... I don't understand where these people are coming from with these ideas. It is un-American. But it seems that some people want to embrace totalitarianism. And I think it's because they're in a place of power. Because those rules won't apply to them. They'll be able to put their boot down on others, but it won't apply to them. And if you're one of those supporting these people, you need to wake up. Because they don't have your interests in mind. Look at their wallets, look at their connections, and ask yourself what they have in common with you and what they really care about. Welcome back to Ed Says. This morning I was able to tune in for a little bit to my companions here on the station, and the talk of welfare came up, and they cited an article by James Walker and talked about the idea that there are people out there abusing the system, and that we as taxpayers should be more vocal, or we should have more rules. And then, of course, the typical from callers I heard was that these firsthand experiences. I see people using their card to buy soda and chips, or get cash back, or all of this nonsense. These anecdotal stories, you know, sum up to the whole of the experience. Like this story out of Maine. The Maine DHHS uncovers $1.7 million in welfare fraud. $1.7 million. That's a ton, right? Except if you look at Maine's annual welfare budget, which is $900 million, $1.7 million is 0.18% of the total. Now, yes, $1.7 million to you and I is a lot of money. I would take that in a second. But $900 million is the actual budget. Every sort of program, business, what have you, is going to have overruns, accounting errors, fraud, theft. Like, it's going to have those issues. But I would argue that 0.18% is way low. I'd like to hear from somebody in retail when it comes to loss prevention. Like, how much, what percentage are they operating when it comes from employees? But everybody that I heard call in had an anecdotal story about, heaven forbid, somebody buying a steak or buying beef or buying a soda with their EBT. Let's go to Joe in Newington. Good morning, Joe.
Hey, Ed, how are you?
What's up?
Hey, this is not fraud, but this goes on, too. It's minuscule, but let's let you know about the story in it, right? Like, you'll go over people's houses, you know, that are, you know, on assistance or whatever, and they'll have, you know, through, like, private and, you know, food banks and churches and things, they'll have, like, big, giant bunches of carrots, potatoes, celery, you know, all kinds of cauliflower, broccoli, and it's sitting there. And I go, oh, no, nobody will eat it. I'm not going to throw it away. I go, are you crazy? Make some soup out of that. It's like, oh, no, they only eat hot dogs and hot pockets. And I go, give me that then. I give it to some, you know, Chinese people that I know. They'll cook it up and they'll do everything. It's just sad, you know. They give you good, and a lot of it's organic, too. I've seen it, you know, organic carrots. I go, it's organic on top of it. You're throwing it away.
All right, Joe, thank you for the call. Again, it's anecdotal. Yes, no one has ever had a hard time getting kids to eat vegetables. Like, okay. But again, when I talk about this, everybody does that. They want to talk about this anecdotal evidence they've seen of what they declare as fraud or misuse. But how long do people stay on these programs if it's that good? I mean, there was talk about people just having babies to get it. Let's go to Don in Winstead. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Ed. I know in the past you were kind of an open-ended advocate of letting immigrants into this country. I'm just calling to see if your position has changed in light of some of the bad things that are in the news going on in Europe, like in Germany and Sweden and so on.
Such as
in Sweden, there was a lot of incidences of rape and desecration of churches and not being able to control Islamists who were kind of cordoning themselves off in their defined sectors of the city and things like that.
Okay, so hold on. Defined sectors. I'll write that down.
Write it down.
You said rape and what did you say, a crime about against churches?
Desecration in churches.
Desecration of churches. Okay, so, I mean, that's already happening here in the United States. When you talk about defined sectors, what we've been doing that for ages. Immigrants have always done that. How do you think you get Chinatown or Little Italy? This is nothing new. It is because it's like being new somewhere at a school. You keep to yourself or people like you, and then you branch out. Like, it's a human normalcy. It's a normality. Like, it shouldn't blow your mind to think that, yes, you've got Hasidic Jews in New York who keep to their own neighborhood. Like, it happens. And then eventually, it takes time to actually integrate into a society, especially when that society is so hell-bent against you being there.
Well, it's more problematic than, you know, just like settling into the Italian section or the Polish section of town. It's like there's Islamics that have been cited for, you know, bothering women, including rape, robberies, and then they run into their...
Yeah, but there's also been Irish Catholics and Hispanics and African Americans and white. Like, that's a human condition of being harassing or even crimes like rape. That's why we have the crime. It's not something that they invented and brought with them. Thank you for the call. I just can't. And then when you have desecration, I'm pretty sure we saw that happening across the nation. I believe a statue was, the head was knocked off at a church. Synagogues have been tagged, lit on fire, and there's been bomb threats called in. Like, these things are not unique to anything. Like, it's a human condition. Bad human beings exist. And the idea that, they're defined sector. Again, it is something that has been happening in the history of our nation. Like, we celebrate these areas in big cities, whether it's Little Italy or Chinatown or what have you. Like, I just don't understand. We're repeating what we've already done. Like, we didn't want the Irish here at one point. I just don't get it. 888-574-2723. Back to when I was talking about welfare. 31% of people who receive it are on it for a year or less. 43% between 3 to 4 years. So that is 74% are 4 years or less. Housing programs have the most long-term participants over 3 years. Cash assistance programs tend to have the most short-term participants in under a year. So this whole narrative of welfare queens or being on it for life is false. Like, there are numbers to back it up. I know it makes you feel good and feel better to have an enemy. And when you see somebody doing something that you deem inappropriate with the funds that were given to them, you think, oh, well, then everybody's doing it. And one, you don't even know what's going on. Two, maybe everybody's not doing it. And then maybe you should spend a little more time reflecting on yourself. Let's, considering it's tax time, tax season, have you ever cheated on your taxes? Have you ever claimed something you shouldn't have? Are you trying to get every dollar you can, maybe by fudging something? Aren't you committing fraud in a way? What about, not casting the first stone, right? This silly argument about helping those in need, it continues to just frustrate me to no end, mostly because it's perpetuated by anecdotal evidence and mistruths. In a perfect world, yes, everybody would be able to get a job, everybody would work, but somebody abusing the system or being a layabout isn't something unique to the poor, the inner cities, to any race, gender. It's a human condition. We will always have a percentage of the population that does that. It's just the way people are wired. But the idea that, this main headline uncovers 1.7 million in welfare fraud, which translates into 0.18% of the total, which I think any business would say, that's pretty damn good. We'll be back on Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut, talking about our governor and his message about ICE. The battle between federal and state continues, this time when it comes to immigration here in Connecticut. Governor Malloy reminding school and law enforcement leaders they do not have to enforce federal immigration laws. His administration sent memos to the superintendents and the chiefs of police saying how they should respond from requests from DHS and how they should interact with ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, their agents. Now, those who are working with illegals saying that Malloy is doing the right thing. Meanwhile, others are disagreeing with him, particularly in this article that I found, Mayor Mark Boughton of Danbury. He says that Malloy's action is simply to score political points by saying we're going to stand against the president. He said the city stands ready to help ICE with the crackdown. He estimated that Danbury has approximately 5,000 undocumented residents. Just saying that nothing has changed, regardless of what is going on both levels, whether it's federal or state. He said that could change if formal action is taken by the feds. He says if a federal agency asks for assistance, they're going to provide it as a force multiplier. The question is, are we a Are we a state that will take in and protect, or are we going to give them up as per the president's orders? Now, the governor has said that we will not. We have a mayor saying that he will. So now we're from the federal to the state to the local level. Fountain saying that city police will comply with the state's Trust Act. It limits local police coordination with federal immigration agents. This according to the police chief there. And he says, if someone's arrested on minor offenses with no records, no detainers or warrants from ICE, we're not calling them. Saying that their job is really to enforce local ordinances. The question is what should they be doing? There have been ICE raids reported throughout cities in the United States that were random. Boughton said ICE doesn't do random stops. They say they're looking for somebody when they call. The question is, where do you fall on this? You're in the... I had a bit of a discussion yesterday with someone who mentioned certain professions, certain lines of work, employ people who are here illegally. And they pay them less than regular wages, and they pay them under the table, tax-free. And those industries, some of which rely heavily on that kind of labor. And you benefit from it for lower prices. The question is, are you willing to pay more for legal employment, legal workers? And why aren't we going after those businesses? I also pointed out that the numbers coming from the South, at least across the border, have diminished greatly in the past decade. And that wasn't such a concern, even though it was a concern of a caller. And that maybe the wall is money not well spent on a project that doesn't really need to be completed. Are there going to be people coming over? Sure. But if we keep giving people reason to, so what do you start with? Do you get the people coming over, or do you get the people employing them? I would say if employment dries up, you probably won't see the numbers. Now, going back to the conversation we had about welfare and assistance, there are those that would say, well, they're just coming to live off us. It's not how it works, but sure. So this idea of removing people doesn't work unless you're also removing the opportunities that they are finding illegally. If someone is here illegally and yet finding work and a way to survive, then you have to go a little further. Because there will be someone willing to take their spot if there is an opportunity. It's really not that complicated. I mean, I hate to say that I should be in charge of everything, but holy cow, I should just be in charge of everything. But it's easy to find a villain and get riled up against them. Got to have an enemy. Got to have somebody to work against. And right now, it's immigrants and Muslim immigrants in particular. Mexicans a close second. And it's just a simple way of looking at things that doesn't accomplish anything. And the thing is, it's not like somebody who came here illegally is probably doing it for villainous reasons. It's not, oh, I'm going to steal a job from that guy right there. A job that he wouldn't take anyway. But I'm going to take that guy's job. And I'm going to make his life miserable, and I'm undermining the fabric of the United States of America. It's probably more like I can have a better opportunity in a country that advertises itself as such. And perhaps I can do better for my children and myself. And there's an opportunity here. If there weren't people willing to pay illegal immigrants, I would argue that you would see things diminish as far as numbers go. 888-574-2723. Stories coming out. Stephon Keller, college manager for CT Students for a Dream, said that the new administration is spreading fear and anxiety throughout the schools, family not wanting to send their kids to school, bullying incidents based on perceived immigration status. When our youth feel threatened, their ability to learn and well-being are compromised. And I wonder how many people out there in their rants against immigration have looked at someone, assumed that they, quote, don't belong here, when that person could very well be more of a longer generation American than the person making the complaint. I mean, you just can't tell by looking at someone where they were born, what language or languages they speak. And just because someone is using a language unfamiliar to you doesn't mean it's their primary or that they're not well-versed in the one here. It just means you are less educated in foreign languages than they are. They know more than you. That's okay. But this assumption by some that anybody who isn't like them visually is an immigrant, illegal immigrant at that, just small-mindedness. And I thought we were beyond all this. But some days, I just get down on it. I just wonder, like, how far have we really advanced, if at all? Have we learned from anything? Because we don't seem to have, based on some of the conversations I have. But this anecdotal evidence, this, I don't know, just this need to have someone beneath you. I don't understand it. And the lack of empathy and the idea that if it's an experience different than yours, it's somehow bad. 888-574-2723, the number into the studio. On Twitter, it's at EdSaysCT. And Ed says at talkofconnecticut.com is the email. Let's go to Jill in Bristol. Good morning, Jill.
Hi, Ed. I just tuned in, so I may not know everything that you've been talking about, but I just wanted to make one comment regarding the immigration issue and Trump and President Trump. So one of the things that I think he thinks like is, as a builder, is structure. And one of the problems I see with what has happened with illegal immigration is it's really changed the foundation. And I think from my thoughts is he's got to be thinking from a builder. You have to correct the foundation. You can't build a house and say, well, it's okay if that electricity isn't working right. We can still, you know, I just feel like it's a mentality he has. And while he doesn't come across well, I understand that we need to correct some structural problems in order to correct some of our very serious problems. And that's right. All I think this is about.
And what I was saying is that you can fix them, but maybe we're looking at the wrong things. Like I said, when it comes to illegal immigrants who are, say, working, who are they making their money from? We seem to want to focus on getting them out, but we're not focusing on what is bringing them here, which is those employers who are willing to pay them under the table and tax-free.
Right, and I do agree with you, and that's another structural problem that has to change.
And I think I think it's the more important one, because without that there, what is the lore?
Uh-huh. Well, I agree with you, and I do, and maybe that's why I'm saying maybe I missed some of what you were saying, but
okay.
I do think that's really important.
Well, I thank you for the call, Jill.
Okay, it's good talking to you.
Have a good day. 888-574-2723. You make a good point that as a builder, here's the thing. That's been one of my knocks about him. People talk about him being a successful businessman, but he's of a sole proprietorship, basically. He is the owner. There is no board. He's never had to. His experience does not apply to what he is doing now. The president of the United States of America does not operate like the CEO Trump does. Cannot. We have three branches of government, all equal in power, checks and balances, and not to mention you're working for your shareholders, which are the citizens of the United States of America. He's never worked with shareholders before. It's all just about bottom line for him and his company. They had no say. He would make the decisions, or he would pay someone to make the decisions, and then it came down to him. He would keep them or fire them. And what he's doing now is more complex than that. It's more complex than the more complex shareholder setup. So having never done that, that sort of shareholders thing, like, this is all new. And you can't necessarily apply the way you've been doing, quote, business to what he's doing as president. And I think one of the problems is that he has no desire to learn. And no one's kind of can push them on it. It's like, well, that's not, nobody's saying, well, you can't do that here. That's not how it works. He's been basically blindly running through, as we see with the executive order. If that executive order was useful, it would have taken a little more time to craft. They would have thought it out, but it was pushed through, thrown against a wall, and then challenged. And I think that when you talk about structurally, we're looking at the wrong part of the structure. We need to look at what is, you know, if you have water getting into your basement. Now, you can look at the source of the water. If there's a creek nearby and it overflows a little, do you dam the creek? Or do you actually just change the pitch of your yard so the water flows elsewhere? You know, getting rid of immigrants, there's going to be others to take their place. Getting rid of a creek, there's still going to be water pouring towards your house when it rains or what have you. You have to look at what's bringing people here. 888-574-2723 is the number to continue the conversation. And up next, we're going to look at the next big leak from Project Veritas. That's next here on Ed Says. We are back here on Ed Says on the Talk of Connecticut. Let's talk about Project Veritas. Are you aware of what it is? Do you know what it is? James O'Keefe, known of the Acorn scandal, which put the nonprofit out of business, even though his footage had been heavily doctored and proven incorrect. The damage was done, and I always like to cite the story of what I was doing when that story broke. I was producing a talk show on a radio station in Boston. The host, very conservative, and continued to repeat the accusations against Acorn and spouting them as truth, when in fact they had been debunked and proved to be false. If you don't remember, O'Keefe went dressed up as a pimp and made the videos look like those at Acorn were giving him advice on how to start his prostitution gig. And even though it had been shown to be false, this host I worked with continued to push that narrative to the point where I had informed him that said, you are lying to people. And that made me throw my lunch across the production room in which I was. Separated from him. It was a frustrating moment for me, and a moment in which I was like, I don't know if this is something I'm comfortable with. So know that you will never, I will never actively lie to you or push a narrative to you if there is information that contradicts it or proves it false. And because I just couldn't, I can't operate like that. But this guy still somehow out there under the new name of Project Veritas, out there doing what he does, and now he's out to expose CNN. And I don't think it's anything shocking or surprising. Now, this comes from Breitbart, so the headline is, CNN editors claim no debate on climate change, call Fox News unbearable. This is now, they've got 200 hours of audio, but this is the big one. It's Joe Sterling was the news desk editor for CNN's online venue, The Wire. He was recorded saying this climate change, science is pretty much on board and there are a few dissenters. There's no debate. It's like, you know, born again saying there's a debate over creationism and all that stuff. There is no debate. All right. Where is the scandal there? I happen to agree. There is evidence and a multitude of it supported by the majority of scientists about climate change, so I would have to argue with that. And then someone else, Nikki Robinson, is a desk editor, saying Fox News, I think, is unbearable. It's horrible. This is the big bombshell that we've been hearing about. This audio also recorded in 2009. By an anonymous whistleblower inside the Atlanta headquarters who's only been identified as Miss X. So this is, you want to talk about being persecuted. This is ridiculous. Of course, the inside of CNN, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, Fox News stinks. And yeah, I think most rational people, when faced with insurmountable evidence, would say, yeah, there is no debate. You can continue to debate it, but you might continue to lose. Until scientists say otherwise, I'm kind of on board with them. I'm going to take their experience and their research in good faith. You know that word, faith, right? Well, that is who I have faith in, is these people who are doing the studies and taking a look at it, who have gotten us this far, who have gotten us self-driving cars, who have gotten us medical marvels, things that would kill people 10 years ago. Now people are surviving and having regular lifespans. Being selective on when you believe scientists and researchers is silly to me. Now, if it's one person saying something and everybody else disagrees with them, yes, you should probably say, yeah, that guy's probably off. Oh, I don't know. Like the guy who said vaccines cause autism. You know, that scientist who's no longer practicing was doing it just to push his own product, just to make a buck. That's why there's peer review. I mean, it's not like there is a cabal of scientists going, oh, we're all going to do this. Let's just get all the industries and just get them, make them go clean because, yay. It doesn't work like that. That's not how science works and research works. But this was the big leak. If you were waiting for something from it, an editor at CNN said there's no debate on climate change, and another one said Fox News is unbearable. Oh, the horror! I can tell you, I've said a lot worse about competing radio stations through my career. Not recently. I don't even care anymore. But when I was young and hungry and angry, boy, I had terrible things to say about them.